Sup, freaks, it's your boy Marty here to introduce this rip of Rabbit Hole Recap. It was brought to you by our good friends down the hall, Unchained. Unchained is here to help you eliminate single points of failure in your custody. They have their 2 or 3 multi-sig vault, which is collaborative custody. You hold 2 keys, they hold 1. You eliminate single points of failure by distributing your keys and their backups geographically. You can lose three of the 4 devices and still get access to your Bitcoin. Unchained is always there as a collaborative custody partner to be the second in the 2 or 3 multi-sig transaction if you need them to sign on your behalf. And their whole company revolves around this 2 or 3 multi-sig setup. They have an IRA that you can roll over into, or you can start a Bitcoin IRA with Unchained. So if you're out there, you're looking at the ETFs, you're like, should I buy the Bitcoin ETF? No. You should hold your own Bitcoin in your IRA. Unchained makes it very easy. So if you're thinking about rolling your IRA into Bitcoin, hit up Unchained. Go to unchained.com/consultation. Talk to their team. You'll be able to roll it over, own actual Bitcoin, not Bitcoin IOUs, and then hold your own keys. It's a 2 or 3 multi-sig quorum. You hold 2 keys. Unchained holds 1. It's a beautiful thing. All right, go to unchained.com/consultation. Tell them that Rabbit Hole Recap sent you and get set up today. This report was also brought to you by our good friends at CoinKite. CoinKite is here building the best hardware in the space. I got this little block clock showing Moscow time right now behind me. It's 1929 in Moscow. It's an inside joke. 1929 sats per cuckbuck. They also make the best Bitcoin wallets, hardware wallets on the market, signing devices. MVK likes to call them signing devices. That's what they are. You got the Mark IV, the MK4, which is the best on the market to date. In this episode, we actually previewed the Q as well, MK4. It's NFC enabled. You create your private public key pairs offline. You can add entropy to your private keys with the roll of dice. It's got an SD card. You do everything offline. You don't touch the internet, so you keep your private keys secure. The Q1 has all the same internal guts as the MK4, but it's got a full keyboard. It's got a QR scanner. It's got a battery pack. It's going to come with a bunch of really cool features. You're going to be able to save your passwords there. You're going to be able to create PSBTs. It's NFC enabled as well. They're building the best hardware out there. Go to coinkite.com. Check it out. Get a block clock. Get a Q1. Get an MK4. Get some SATs cards, some tap signers. It's really sci-fi technology. It's really approachable. Coinkite.com. Try RHR. Try CD, try TFTC. Still don't know if we have a code. Enjoy this rip. Ticky.
You've had a dynamic where money's become freer than free.
When you talk about a Fed,
you've had a
just
dynamic where
nuts.
Money's become freer
all
than free.
All the central banks going
when
nuts.
You
talk about a Fed
so
just gone
like
nuts.
Safe haven.
All the
I
central banks
believe
going
that
nuts.
In a world where central
so
bankers are tripping
like
over themselves to devalue their
I
currency,
believe that Bitcoin
in a world
wins.
Where central
world
bankers are tripping over themselves to devalue their currency, Bitcoin wins. In a world of fiat currencies, Bitcoin is the victor.
You probably should.
That's part of the bull case for Bitcoin.
If you're not paying attention, you probably should be.
Boom, and we're live. What is up, freaks? Rabbit Hole Recap. What is this, 296? 297?
296.
296. Live from the Bitcoin Commons.
Woo!
Is this the first live RHR in the Commons?
In the Commons, yes. We did one at the old Unchained office 3 years ago, I think. So this is the first live one.
No, it isn't.
At the Commons, yeah.
We've definitely done one here before.
No, it was down the street. That was the last one we did.
Wait, raise your hand if you've been to a live RHR at the Commons before.
Well, now everybody should raise their hand because they're at one, but...
No, I'm pretty sure we had one here. Okay, whatever. It doesn't matter. Continue.
It doesn't. thank you, Simon. Before we start, I think... We should all give a big round of applause to Parker Lewis here. I mean,
and Kaylee.
And Kaylee. Parker and Kaylee. I mean, and Will to an extent. Most, like, Will and I are CC'd on all the emails with the speakers, but it's really Parker and Kaylee that are running anything, running everything, the amount of attention to detail that Parker puts into these events and the energy expends leading up to it. I get to see it up close and personal here in the Commons every day, and it is a Herculean effort. So thank you, Parker, for putting this together. I think it was a great day.
This is a really great event. You crushed it.
I'm glad people value it.
Yeah. No, I think starting on that, like, we changed the format this year intentionally. First 2 years, really Bitcoin 101. Why did you want to change it this year and focus more on builders and where Bitcoin's going?
Yeah, I think it really started with a conversation that the three of us had, you, me, Will. But the last couple of years, we've thrown the takeover, and it was awesome. And we got great feedback from it. This is the third time we've done it. The last 2 years, we did a lot of panels. We focused on a lot of big picture ideas. And while that went very well, it seemed like, you know, it's easy for someone just to show up and not prepare anything and hop on a panel, and, you know, can be apparent that not a lot of thought goes into it. And so while it was great in the past, you know, we got such great feedback, we wanted to continue to be able to deliver something that such that the same people could keep coming back and feel like they were getting something. And also with the price ripping, I think it's important to reinforce that this is about building, you know, and I managed to make it all the way to the end without saying 21 million. And so that was a real success for me, but to reinforce that it requires real people to build real things, and was dynamic in a way that could offer something new that I didn't think there was a forum where it was just dedicated to people who are leading companies presenting on their vision and the importance of their infrastructure. Will, do you want to add anything?
Just that I vehemently disagree with you that the only thing that matters is number go up, the price ripping. That rules. It's the best thing ever. But no, I mean, like, it's ripping in part because of everyone that spent 10 years building the infrastructure for Bitcoin to work. So, yeah.
Matt was hoping for an all-time high during RIP, but we dumped right before the show. So back under 70.
I mean, so we're live on the internet right now. So, like, to the people on the internet, like, the key difference this year was that we did presentation format, right? So we had, how many founders were here? Was it 10 founders
presented? Yeah. And also one thing I didn't mention was that when you give a presentation, so each person gave a presentation talking about the why of their business and where they're focused and why. And when you have to put together a presentation to talk to a group of people, it requires preparation, and you're also crafting, you know, a set of information for an audience as to why what they're sitting there listening to is important. So they did a presentation followed by Q&A too, which
Q&A
is
really
important.
Yeah. I really enjoy the Q&A. And are those going to be posted on the internet as well? Or
so I'm going to ask for approval from each speaker to put them on the internet, but if I get...
Yeah, where can the internet people see that when they're posted on the internet?
Go to the Bitcoin Commons YouTube channel. It'll either be Bitcoin Commons YouTube channel or Unchained YouTube channel.
Let's fucking go.
Yeah. Speaking of Q&A, the format for these live shows that we've done historically is we have a couple of topics that Matt and I haven't even discussed. I have one in my head. I'm sure you have some in your head.
I have no topics.
Okay.
Oh, I have one topic. I think we have the same topic, maybe. No, we have a different topic.
Okay. We have a topic. Then we like to make these live shows more interactive, so we'll open up the Q&A and make this a collaborative experience with the audience here.
By the way, that back and forth is why we don't do panels.
What back and forth?
I don't have a topic.
Wait, raise your hand if you know what Rabbit Hole Recap is. Let's fucking go. So we have, what, like about 125 people here right now? There was like, it was packed house. We had like 200 people here earlier. We lost 75 people. It seems like maybe 30% have not known what Rabbit Hole Recap is. It's a weekly show Marty and I do. We've done every week for the last 5.5 years. He's had 2 kids. I've gotten married. I had a kid. We both escaped New York. Never skipped a week. March 12, 2020, the price dropped to 3,500. There was a rabbit hole recap that week. Here we are.
There was also a TFTC with Parker Lewis the night before it dropped to 3,500. What was your line at the end there?
I think it was, God save the Bitcoiners, there are no circuit breakers.
And it would have been nice to have circuit breakers.
There was Arthur Hayes pulled the plug.
Yeah, he did. Speaking of pulling the plug, that's a topic I have in mind. Big topic of today was censorship resistance. And a big topic in the news this week is the TikTok ban that's making its way. I think it was signed into law a couple of days ago. Really focused on TikTok, but it seems if you read the letter of the bill that was proposed and signed, there's going to be more wide-reaching potential beyond TikTok. What are your thoughts, Matt?
It's one of those like great named American draconian bills, like the Patriot Act. You know, it has way further implications than just TikTok. It's written quite vague. It gives the federal government far-reaching powers in terms of restricting speech on the internet. And I think it can't be looked at in isolation. Like right now, Section 230 is in front of the Supreme Court. I think their ruling is going to be in June. And it's rather unfortunate. There's widespread bipartisan support in this country among our corrupt ruling class, to restrict speech on the internet. And the Republicans specifically on Section 230 are making a gross misstep because they're so upset with so much censorship that has happened on the centralized social media platforms that they want to fuck over the platforms. But ultimately, what happens is it's going to result in way more censorship. Because just to unpack the Section 230 thing, the way Section 230 works is it reduces liability for centralized platforms on what people post. So when like Marty Jones goes and just sends out a tweet in the middle at 2 a.m. at night, like Elon's not liable for Marty's post. Once these social media companies become liable for all those posts, their massive team of lawyers are just going to be flagging everything because they're not going to want to get sued in every jurisdiction. They could get sued in all the states at once. So the combination of that and the TikTok bill, I think just it highlights more than ever that we actually need tools that can't be censored in the first place. Because if there is a person in charge that can press that button, then the button is inevitably going to get pressed.
Does this make you more receptive to Noster, Parker?
Oh, yeah, Noster.
I don't
this.
Think that Noster is censorship resistant, so...
Well, I think we're about to find out.
Well, we are. But, you know, what I'd say is, for those of you guys who are here in the morning, I read a quote from Alexander Hamilton about, you know, one of the founding fathers of the United States appreciating the risk of the government's ability to print money, and that basically forecasting what has happened of when they have that tool, what they will do. And one of the dots that I didn't connect in my riffing at the beginning was that, in my view, it really allows for the undermining of the structure of government. And that when you see things like TikTok, the TikTok ban, which I agree with Matt, that you have to see it in context of other things, but also what it's really going at is this attack on the First Amendment and free speech. It's not just that the government has lost the plot, and particularly Washington, D.C., both Senate and the House of Congress and the Uniparty, but I think that if the money couldn't have been co-opted, I don't think that the people who put together the structure of government with all the checks and balances could have ever forecast that the federal government could entirely co-opt the function of money. And they wouldn't be able to finance themselves and put into place these unpopular laws if not for that fact. And so I think that one of the messages that I'd tie from the beginning of the day to now is that they have lost the plot, and the way to stop it and get back to a truly representative form of government that has genuine checks and balances is to take the money printing away from the government. It's not that I'm anti-government or anti-establishment. It's that we need to take the fly out of the ointment and get back to basically harmonizing what was a beautiful system that's been co-opted.
Yeah. I think the justification for this particular bill is a bit hypocritical. They're saying the Chinese government's taking all U.S. citizens' data, which, yes,
they definitely are. That.
Yeah. But the U.S. government, as was proven by Edward Snowden, is spying on us as well. So it's like, and it's been well known for many years that China's stealing all of our IP anyway. It just seems like a veiled, the TikTok is just an excuse to push forward and take away more of our civil liberties as they pertain to free speech.
And we're in an election year too. Like, there's specific wording in it that if you are thought to be manipulating elections, that's when it comes into play. And you know, we know how non-objective and messy that can be. You can just choose. You can just choose when you want to use it and when you don't want to use it.
Am I right in remembering that in this bill, the power to censor is vested in the executive branch?
Yes, basically. Correct. Isn't that a great idea?
Which is really funny. Like, that's particularly funny for, you know, it took what, 3 years from everyone with Trump derangement syndrome and Never Trumpers to change the tune and say, like, actually, we should give more censorship power to the executive branch. Like, that just shows how fake the TDS stuff was to begin with.
Yeah. And I mean, just to show like how bipartisan it is too, like Mnuchin was on CNBC, you know, our former Treasury Secretary. He was Treasury Secretary, right?
Yeah.
Our former Treasury Secretary,
also known as Steve Munchenbutts.
He was like, he's like, I'm putting together a group of investors to buy TikTok.
Yeah.
A
couple. That's a funny point because, like, we're coming up on the point where Joe Squawk asked Mnuchin.
Joe Kernan, our boy.
Yeah, Joe Kernan, our boy. Yeah.
Joe, if you're listening, you're welcome to come to the Commons anytime.
Somehow, like, 6 years it came up. He's like, you're still going to be talking about Bitcoin in 6 years. Like, I'm not going to be talking about Bitcoin in 6 years. That was like 5.5 years ago. So we're coming up on the Mnuchin 6 year.
And they're still talking about it.
You know, dunk. And, but, you know, the thing that Will said is, like, when you look at these things, they're so veiled, right? Because if it was about China owning a social media platform, they'd make a bill about China. And I'm not even speaking to the wisdom of banning Chinese investment or not, just like recognizing it for what it is. There are rules that Chinese interests can't own power plants.
It could literally be two sentences like,
yeah,
Chinese can't own social media in America.
Yeah.
Or like, it could just be that.
Or any company. And Marty's point about how the fact that they're stealing all of our IP anyways, just like what this is about is censorship and wanting to have more control as the government to be able to control what we say. And it's really strikes at the heart of First Amendment. So it'll be very interesting to see the challenges to it if it does make its way through.
I think Noster is going to have its time to shine.
What I like to say is that free speech is not it's not a technical standard. It's a legal standard. Like, can you say something and not get thrown in jail?
Free speech is defended by tools.
Well,
and those
it
tools
is,
come
but
in
what I'm saying is
sizes.
The most important thing is that you can't become a political dissident because you say something that the government doesn't like. And these actions are encroaching on that. Then my opinion is Nostra's not censorship resistant. So we'll see.
Come and take it.
I will say one thing in defense of the United States here is that Canada is way further out than us. They had a bill that came out, I think, yesterday.
That's when you know you're fucked, when that's the... Yeah.
We're still better than the Canadians. Yeah. I mean, their bill is actually that a judge could determine that you are likely to violate free speech or to violate hate speech laws in the future to keep you in house arrest. That's up for votes right now in Canada.
And if you do exhibit a form of hate speech or wrong think, as it's probably properly coined, you can get thrown in prison for life in Canada.
Yeah, and the most ridiculous speech is considered hate speech in Canada, like saying that Justin Trudeau's the son of Castro.
Yeah.
That's hate speech.
The Cuban nipple crisis is real.
Yeah.
More people need to be aware.
That was my topic.
This is what censorship-resistant media sounds like.
Yes. No, but these hate speech laws, not only in Canada, I mean, you can get this will be deemed a hate speech law. They'll claim hate speech or intervening in elections to come down on Americans, but these are popping up everywhere. The UK, yeah. All throughout Europe. Free speech is under attack globally right now.
There's a competition between sovereigns.
Yeah.
Who can be the nastiest? Who can be the worst?
Yeah, and that's where I think like the relativism between the US and Canada, like, yes, maybe true, but it's all going in the wrong direction.
Yeah.
I think I do know your topic, though.
What? I don't think you do.
Roman. Bitfog.
You got it.
I did. It's an important one, too. I mean, on the same line of civil liberties and the state overextending its boundaries, Roman Sterlinov, I believe is his name.
Yeah, I don't know how to pronounce it. Something like that.
The U.S. government is claiming that Iran Bitfog.
Bitcoin Fog.
Bitcoin Fog.
Which is still running right now.
Yes.
But he's been in jail for 3 years.
Been in jail for 3 years, but was prosecuted this week and is going to jail
on chain analysis, chain surveillance,
black box
data.
Yeah,
that basically just proves that he was a user of it. So the way a centralized Bitcoin mixer works, which were very popular back in the day, is you send Bitcoin in and they send you someone else's Bitcoin. So it breaks the trail on the blockchain, on the ledger of Bitcoin transactions. So it's harder to track. And what they supposedly have him on is sending from Kraken after doing KYC and sending into Bitcoin Fog, which is typical user behavior of doing that. He has admitted to using the service. The judge admitted that using the service itself is not a crime, but operating it is. And they found him guilty for operating the service.
Yeah. And so this is, as Bitcoiners, I think this is directly relevant to what we're doing here, because I think this sets a nasty precedent. It seems like Roman's legal team is going to appeal the decision, but if they appeal and they don't win, this precedent's very bad. It's essentially, I was talking to a gentleman from the Resolver team about this yesterday at the Builders Day, and there's been precedents. There was precedent like this set in DNA testing for crimes back in the 80s, it was essentially the same thing where you had a black box of DNA technology that was throwing a bunch of people in jail that were innocent. And it took 2 decades to basically claw that back and have the DNA technology companies open up their black boxes so people could audit what they were actually doing. And a very similar thing, if this precedent is set and allowed to move forward, can happen in the Bitcoin space where the government chain analysis can tell the government something and the government has precedent to be like, well, chain analysis is the truth, so you are going to jail.
And it wasn't just that those transactions that went into Bitcoin Fog. There was also supposedly another transaction that included many hops, like many different transactions that happened, and they like say it's linked to buying the domain.
The DNS, yeah.
And it really, like, you can use this precedent. You can use the same exact technique they did. Besides the people that just buy Bitcoin and just hold it on an exchange, or buy Bitcoin and just immediately hold it on their hardware wallet and never send a transaction, you could do it to put any Bitcoiner in jail. Like, you can just pick and choose selective enforcement. If you don't like them, they're saying something you don't like, you can just throw them in jail based on this. And people have been mostly quiet about it. People are, you know, it's a sensitive subject. People don't like talking about it. But it's, I think it's particularly like a nasty situation, because we see FinCEN encroachment, we see this happening, we see the EIA stuff that fortunately we successfully pushed back on. But like, in a lot of ways, there's aggressive regulatory action happening against individual Bitcoiners, happening against the ecosystem. And at the same time, we're kind of just tranquilize dogs with the number go up, which I love. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, I get very excited when the number goes up, but it like kind of calms us down while we're under attack.
Yeah. What I was just going to add is that, when you think about this, there is an agenda, right? There's an agenda both to make an example, but to continue to, you know, go out further on the ledge to have control and power, which in my view is actually departing from constitutional protections. And so when you look at things through that lens and then also recognize that, like, Bitcoin is technical, and, you know, thinking about a regulator or a legislator trying to understand, and then thinking about a judge or a jury trying to understand, you know, what is actually happening, or, you know, the government's presenting evidence. It's like, the government's not qualified to present evidence on Bitcoin, and then also the jury's not qualified, you know, like, but to think that this type of example could put somebody away for a long period of time, without actual proof, without circumstantial proof, you know, email corroboration or, you know, other receipts, is something that we should all be seriously concerned out for. That pattern of, there is a underlying agenda, and the people that are then the pawns that are setting policy based on it really don't understand what they're doing and can't be qualified to do it.
Well, was it the Bitcoin fog case where they didn't let the Bitcoin experts put forward evidence against Chainalysis, and Chainalysis basically fights?
Yeah, they said they weren't experts.
Yeah.
And, you know, as we all know, Chainalysis can say nothing with absolute certainty. It's all probabilistic gobbledygook. And I mean,
I think it was Brian Bishop, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, which is fucking ridiculous.
Brian Bishop's literally written, transcribed every word ever spoken about.
But he doesn't have 20 years of Bitcoin experience, so he can't be an expert. Yeah.
I mean, he was here earlier today. I don't know if Brian is still here. For those of you guys who do not know Brian, what do you call someone who can type really fast?
Stenographer?
Is he a stenographer?
He's a stenographer.
Anyway, he's a fast typer. And so he literally, he'll sit in an audience.
Wait, he's the fastest fucking typer.
Yeah. He'll he'll manually transcribe as you're speaking at an event, you know, at a conference. And then he'll, you know, keep records of it. Doesn't put on the internet.
Yeah, God mode is him sitting in front of Lalu giving a presentation.
Can we talk about something like bullish and happy?
Yes. It's been a very bullish day. We have to bring expectations in line. Remember what we're fighting for. Now, the Roma case, like you said, not many people are talking about it. And I think the point that we are being tranquilized a bit with the price ripping.
That's what's happening, right?
Yeah.
Like, there's a meme template there. I'm trying to structure it on the fly.
This is all part of Larry Fink's plan.
Yeah, I mean, like, the suits are pumping our bags at the same time as they attack us.
Yeah. All right. What's bullish that you want to talk about?
Well, the suits are pumping our bags. Before we go to the bullish thing, there's just been a lot of confusion and concern around a specific cold card feature. Here on Rabbit Hole Recap, we love the cold card. My family relies on the cold card. My businesses rely on CoinKite Hardware. They're a sponsor of the podcast. 1031's investors in CoinKite. Proud investors. The only external investors in CoinKite. Cold card has a dice roll feature. When you create a new seed, you can choose 12 words, 24 words, then 12 words dice roll, 24 words dice roll. If you choose the dice roll feature, that's like for advanced users only. Like, don't take that very seriously, because you're rolling the dice. When you roll the dice, you're creating the randomness for your seed. That's what secures your private keys, is that entropy that is generating your seed. So just don't do that.
Well, I'd be interested to get your perspective on this. I mean, and the whole reason for the dice entropy existing in the first place so that you ultimately don't have to trust CoinKite at the
end. Exactly. So you can rug yourself without CoinKite.
Yeah.
It's like anything else, right? Like, only do these things if you're an expert, right? You know, there's any number of things that you can do that could, you know, possibly increase your security posture, but it's going to negatively influence your, it's going to be a negative posture if you don't know what you're doing, right? So if you don't know what you're doing, CoinKite is a lot better to trust them than to use this feature in an inadequate way. We talk about this a lot back when we were at Unchained, is like, we would allow people to, you know, potentially change the BIP32 space that we were pulling the public key from, you know, all that. Don't do it unless you really know what you're doing. Put all these warnings all over the place and things like that. And then when people do it too often, then we lose functionality because the hardware wallets will shut down the ability to do these advanced things, which really we don't want them to be that opinionated. So I would say this in any Bitcoin security situation is, you know, read the manual, find someone that knows what they're doing, or just do it the way it's you know, natively built to do.
Okay, now on to Bullish News.
I concur. Everything. Agree.
I thought it was an important PSA. There was a lot of confusion. I had a lot of people texting me. I had some people texting me. There were a couple of people.
Yeah, one thing I'll add is that if you're moving your mom onto a hardware wallet, you don't necessarily need to use the most tech.
Wait, I really like BitKey.
Yeah,
like, I do think too. I think we That's have Steve Lee in the audience.
We there actually, I don't know, oh, is
Steve,
Nick still here?
We don't bite. Come closer. Who'd you say? Nick.
Yeah, there's a guy from.
Yeah, Nick. I meant Nick. I think he Square. Left though.
Okay, he actually worked on the hardware wall. He works on the hardware team.
Yeah, he works on both the mining and the. And the BitKey. But the BitKey is this new hardware wallet from Block, formerly Square. How long are we're going to be saying that for a while, I think.
Honestly, it's going to catch at some point, but I don't think Alphabet ever did.
I think all the presentations that mentioned BlockTech and Square on the
I think people really, I mean, still like X on like app stores, X parentheses, formerly Twitter. Like how long is that going to last? This wallet, there's a little bit of a messaging issue because in the beginning, like I think a lot of people thought it was like built for the developing world. Like this is the ideal Charles Schwab user wallet. Like my parents can use this wallet. I don't have to walk them through it, right? Like if you're thinking about doing the ETF because you think self-custody is too scary, you can buy this BitKey. It feels really nice in your hand. You know, is it the most cypherpunk hardware device? Is it the most secure in terms of like threat modeling against Block itself? No, but it's incredibly secure for what it is. It has a really great recovery model. It feels really good in hand. It feels like something you'd hold $1 million in. The UX is slick as fuck. And it has a nice little pairing app. You just tap it, you go, boom. I think it's a big deal. Like I think especially for this, you know, this new ETF generation, it's going to be their first touch point into self-custody.
Yeah. So for those that are not familiar, I think it just went for sale.
Yeah, they don't accept Bitcoin.
Frankly, the fact, I mean, we got the better of the lot with right. Steve Lee, like Steve Lee's, you know, better than, no, I'm kidding. I have no gripes with Jack Dorsey. I'm just saying like he could have come and announced it here that it was for sale, but
who Jack?
Yeah, I'm joking. That's a joke. But what the serious part about it is that, so
you have to be more confident.
Yeah, I don't want to shit on him because like sometimes I'm critical, but I don't want to think people think it's personal. And I do have great appreciation. So like for me on my Bitcoin journey, going out of the country, and this was a time where was before I was on Unchained, still working, just pulling up a hardware wallet, a Trezor, that the connection of just any internet connection, and I had access to my wealth in a random country and I could move it without permission. It wasn't just that helped me understand something about Bitcoin. It was that it was a powerful feeling. And I think that we need to advocate as strongly as possible to steer people that share those values to the places that are truly sovereign, that there is both great security and great power in having control over your wealth in a way that no man, woman, judge, advocate could take something from you that you've produced in the past. At the same time, the BitKey is better for every single user on Coinbase. Yeah.
Or Cash App.
Or potentially Cash App. You know, and I think I saw
every ETF holder.
I saw Michael Rahani talk about how they were working on deeper integrations. We think of them all as one, but they're different companies. So
the ETFs have $60 billion of Bitcoin right now.
Yeah. And every mother and father could use a BitKey. So I do think it's like the Bitcoiners and like it is incredibly important. The BitKey is not self-sovereign. Like there is in theory, or not in theory, there's a way where they could move funds. No,
I would call it self-sovereign. It's a collaborative custody model. We're sitting in we're next to Unchained's offices. It's a new take on a collaborative custody model.
It is, but they have a copy of multiple keys.
It is not trustless.
Well,
they don't have a copy of multiple keys. It's the biggest issue is that
no one's
verifying. Like the app is holding a key, right?
Right.
You're installing the app from the app store.
But it's backed up on the cloud.
And the app is technically source viewable, but like if you're installing it on your iPhone, you're not, you know. They could ship you a malicious update. They could presumably ship you a malicious update, but in a situation where they're not actively doing that. And by the way, that's Casa's model too on their 2 of 3.
Yeah.
Where like they could just ship you a malicious update and then they have the app key, but by design, they only have the server key. The cloud key is encrypted with your hardware device or your trusted family contacts. So they have it set up in a way that you could actually lose the hardware device and you could lose your phone and you could still recover your money.
Look,
you could lose your phone. You can still recover your money. You can lose a hardware device. You can still recover your money. You can lose both. You can still recover your money. Their server could go out and you could still recover your money. Like yeah. It's a pretty clever model, and the user has no idea about how any of this works. They don't have seed phrases. Like they thought of a lot of it.
Yeah, I'm not trying to squabble. Is that the word?
I'm trying to squabble.
Yeah, you're trying to squabble.
Squabbler.
This is what we do in our.
You're in the squabbling den, sir.
The great thing about it is it's more secure than Coinbase.
Or like much more.
Much more. It's 10x better than anything on Coinbase or Binance or anything else or an ETF. There's a world where they can prevent you from moving your money, and there's a world where they malicious update. I'll let Will tell the story about South Park and Steve Jobs and a human centipede about everyone just hits update. There's a real world where there's a way for them to prevent you from getting your money. And that is different from a world where that can't happen. And in certain ways, those worlds are night and day, just fundamentally. So I'm saying this is an awesome product. I think that, you know, if you could repeat the line, this is like the Charles Schwab of Bitcoin wallets.
It's the Charles Schwab.
Did Jack pay you to say that?
No, I came up with that. Jack can't come up with that.
He can't, or he would have. All right, we'll have some.
I think, Will, before you hop in, I think at the very least what interests me most about the BitKey setup is just like expanding the horizon of designs, ways to design user experiences around key management, which I think is desperately needed. And their integration with NFC, I think, is awesome because I really like these hardware devices that are NFC compatible. I think it's an incredible user experience.
Yeah, I think that there's like kind of three factors you have to think about, right? Which is like your technical abilities, how much you're storing, and then what you want to do with that money, right? Determines like your security posture and what you should be doing. I think what BitKey does is it basically eliminates the story that you ever need to be on a fully trusted third-party custodian. They make it super easy, so much so that like, and that's an upgrade. Now, would you want to keep $10 million on there? Like, I don't know. I mean, it kind of depends, right? There are ways to graduate your security posture as your abilities and as the value you're storing goes up. And then of course you have to consider, what are you trying to do with the money, right? Like, are you trying to transact it very often? Are you trying to save it for a long period of time? Do you want it in a tax advantage status? I mean, you know, when we were at Unchained, we would always tell people, it's like, this isn't the only way to do it, right? There are trade-offs. You're giving something up, namely privacy, when you use Unchained custody, right? However, if you're really concerned about inheritance or something like that, then we would, you know, just be very upfront about it. And so I agree with the Charles Schwab, you know, of thing here, because I think that it eliminates the need for pretty much anyone to ever just leave long-term Bitcoin on a place like Coinbase. And God knows we need to get a lot of Bitcoin off of Coinbase.
Coinbase, is that what you almost said?
We
Freudian slip.
Should we announce Charles Schwab is the new sponsor of the podcast?
Yes.
Obviously.
We're Schwabies now.
Can you sell all their customers a copy of my book?
Yes, yeah. Actually, it comes baked in.
Speaking of Freudian slips, Tura had a good one the other night at the Bitcoin Urbanism.
How many of you guys came to the Bitcoin Urbanism event? All right. Can Let's you go. Like, explain what a Bitcoin Urbanism event is?
It's not urbanism. As an urban environment. It was the first one, I think Tur was confident enough to say that was the first Bitcoin urbanism meetup in the world ever. And it was a great night. We had Kelly Lannon, who has the Bitcoin urbanism Substack that he's been writing for some years now. And then Austin Tennell, who's doing some incredible things up in Oklahoma City with his company Building Culture, really trying to bring durable, aesthetically beautiful architecture back to the world. And Bitcoin urbanism is essentially the fusing of the physical world as it's built and Bitcoin and sound money. And the idea of Bitcoin urbanism is that we can use the sound money standard as a mechanism and an avenue to begin building beautiful, durable things in the physical world, because the fiat standard has completely corrupted the incentives of the real estate market to a point where these contractors are just incentivized to build houses as cheaply and quickly as possible that aren't going to sustain the test of time. And we really need to get back to a world in which we're building beautiful, durable architecture, because the physical world impacts us psychologically. And then from an economic perspective, like, it actually makes more sense in the long run to build these durable real estate projects, because it may be cheap in the short term to spin up a suburban sprawl, but you find that it comes with a bunch of technical debt on the back end of that, where you have to repair the houses, repair the infrastructure. And that was a long-winded way of describing Bitcoin urbanism.
And now to Tur Demeester's Freudian slip. So as he's describing how much he loves Texas, and I think he's from Belgium, Bruges. And been all over the world, but he loves Texas and he loves the freedom here. And he referred to it as a country. he was like, the thing about this country is it's bigger than France, and they love freedom here. And it was like unmistakably about Texas, not the United States. And Will's going to be a seventh grade Texas history teacher, so.
Well, this does mark the end of the Battle of Refugio between William Ward and Urrea. A lot of those people that were captured would later be executed at Goliad, but they slowed down the army just enough, and y'all learned in a few days that the Battle of San Jacinto, Urrea couldn't get back. But anyway, Bitcoin urbanism. Thank you. What I wanted to say has anyone ever been better at brainwashing like an entire generation of people than Wrath of Nan? I don't think any of us cared about any of this until Wrath of Nan came out with the idea of like beautiful architecture and urbanism revival. Like, I mean, I know there's a world outside of Twitter, but I don't believe that anyone cared about this until him.
No, well, that was the beautiful thing about the meetup on Wednesday night, was that it really highlighted that I think there's been individuals who are separated and recognize that something's wrong, but it took something like a Wrath of Nan. For those who are unfamiliar, Wrath of Nan is just a Twitter account who posts pictures of beautiful architecture, beautiful cities, and he basically complains like, why aren't we building this anymore? And that's the thing about these buildings and towns that Wrath of Nan shares, is like, they're objectively beautiful. And then when you look at what we've built over the last five decades since we went off the gold standard, particularly here in America with our suburban sprawl, it is objectively ugly and the complete opposite of what we as humanity were able to build millennia ago. And that's like the crazy paradox we find ourselves in. We claim to be the most advanced society that's ever existed on this planet, and yet we can't build durable, beautiful things that humans could do thousands of years ago.
I remember a really silly comment from Parker that you told me one time, where I was complaining about the building that went up to your right next to your old apartment, 70-story glass monstrosity, the worst thing I've ever seen. And Parker just looked at me and said, they could never build that if it weren't for fiat money. You could not possibly take on the risk to build a 70-story building that's not pre-leased if you weren't on a fiat standard with easy money.
Yeah, and one thing that on that point, there was this, I just had this connection of, like, it doesn't make sense. There's this like beautiful brick building right next to this 70-story monstrosity that Sahil probably loves. And I am judging him for that, but I still like him. Internal conflict. It's like literally right next to each other. Like, okay, there's a 5-story beautiful brick building, and then there's a 70-story glass building. And you're like, the only way that this could happen next to each other, that somebody doesn't go and build like a 6-story building and then a 7-story, that you would just have these massive gaps, is that, and then also this building that is not yet, like, there's no one using it yet. They started digging the hole in 2020, you know, like and you couldn't do that in a world where you're not using somebody else's money at an artificially suppressed interest rate. Just like, and that was the point that I made to Will. And so I do think that when you start to think about it, it's not just building, but building is a great example. Safe Dean talks a lot about time preference, and that when your money is being debased, it's a combination. When your money is being debased, you build different type of things. But also, if you live in a world of broken and manipulated monetary, like a monetary structure, you can also, quote, afford to build things that you otherwise couldn't, and a lot gets sacrificed in that. And so I do, you know, I personally value and appreciate, you know, thinking about Bitcoin's connectivity to real things and those derivative consequences, because you can't put your finger on, well, that thing got built because of this one thing. But when you start to think about incentives, Bitcoin is going to alter everything, because money is the foundation of an economy, and putting the world back on a sound money standard will create a lot of healing for a lot of different kind of derivative and tangential worlds beyond the first order.
But without the money printing, who will build the cathedrals?
Not Elizabeth Warren.
I mean, do you know what mortgages look like on the gold standard?
Who will build the roads?
Yeah. No, another inspiring thing about that meetup was Austin, particularly, because he's been hyper focused on what he's doing at building culture, and he's recognized that these problems exist, and he's internalized the concept of low time preference, isolated in this world of masonry. And it wasn't until he met Tur a couple of years ago, and Tur said, you don't know, but you're a Bitcoiner, you should read the Bitcoin standard, that he read the Bitcoin standard, was like, holy crap, we're like completely aligned. So that's something that makes me incredibly bullish and encouraged. And like I said in my presentation this morning for TFTC, what I'm trying to do with the Trojan horse is find these tangential movements where there's people who's hyper-focused on one thing and we're philosophically aligned on a lot of ideas. They just don't understand that Bitcoin is part of the solution to what they're trying to solve. And so individuals like Austin recognizing that almost intuitively after reading one book is extremely encouraging.
Will's trying to find his second 7th grade Texas history lesson. Yeah, one of the things that I took away from it was that I think what you mentioned, this like intuitive, you know, people are feeling this all over the place in their own lives, in their own, whatever their business is. And one of the challenging things is they can't put the finger on what is wrong. And if they can't do that, then they start searching for all the things that could be the drivers of their, you know, challenges or the things that they, you know, are struggling with. And then when they can start to explain it and start to see that the connection is tied to money and the incentive, it's a really empowering thing in that, right, of saying like, okay, like think about Austin, who's this incredible builder. You guys should check him out at buildingculture.com. But thinking about all the problems and how he's going to fix them, and then think about this like bright line, and he has no idea that the thing that's a huge part of the problem is the money being broken. How do you fix, you know, there's certain things that you can do on the edges, but if you're not seeing half the equation, you're not going to be incredibly effective, or maybe not effective at all in crafting a solution. And then when that kind of idea pops, it's like, holy shit, this is on a whole different level than I was thinking before. Then you put yourself in a position to actually solve problems. Like an example that he was talking about was, you know, one of the reasons they don't build this way is because it's expensive. It's not really expensive. It's just that fewer people are doing it because of the consequences of the money structure. Because making brick is not hard. And if you have more people building with brick, you can drive the prices down of brick. And you can actually do that if you're, you know, saving in a form of money that doesn't get debased. And so it was inspiring to see him talk and his passion, but then also the more that he connects with Bitcoin, which is already starting to fire, it's going to empower a lot of people to look and think about problems where they're experts in ways that they couldn't without it.
I wanted to answer your cathedral question seriously. I saw something.
We're going to build the fucking cathedrals.
Yeah, we are. But someone did a really, some guy on the internet said something really interesting. So I wanted to say it, which is they're breaking down basically like, okay, it took 100 years to build a cathedral, right? And say you were trying to do that in modern times. You're going to take 100 years to build a cathedral and it was going to cost $1 billion. With 0% inflation, you just have your $1 billion, and every year you just pay it down until at the very end, you've spent your $1 billion and you have your cathedral. At 2% inflation, right, you start spending your $1 billion, and about halfway through, you run out, right? And so you have half a cathedral and you're out of money, right? Because the money is bad. At 10% inflation, which, shout out Chapwood Index, we've probably been under for quite a while, right? You build about a third of a building. In order to finish it, you need around $200 billion to finish that $1 billion cathedral. That's why we have problems building beautiful, long-lasting things, low-time preference things, is because of inflation. That's it.
Should we open it up to the audience?
Should we go to Q&A?
Yeah. I love these topics, by the way.
Wait, can we... Is the top in for the year?
I don't think so.
Can we chat about price a little bit?
I don't really like to.
Are you, how bullish are you right now? Are you how are you feeling about it?
The vibes are high.
Is this time different? We're like before the halving. The macro environment's fucking crazy.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I can't imagine with the halving and all the hash rate and driving down our beautiful power costs that, I can't imagine it, but, the most important thing is people continuing to, you know, do the inputs, which is educate and build products that make it more useful, more secure. And so, yeah, I'm super bullish. Like, I love these type of events. When you get people in the same room, you can feel the energy and that energy transfers into real productive things and people that, you know, have ideas that they didn't have, and they can put things in the world that didn't exist before. So no, you know, I don't think that we're at the high of the year. The halving is in a month, and a lot of good things are going to happen between then and now. Now, I don't know, and this is the same thing that I always reinforce, is that in a non-political way, the dollar is a problem and everyone needs to check their six, because I don't know if Bitcoin's going to be $100K in a month, but there's going to be another dollar liquidity crisis, and everyone has to prepare for that day.
Do you think the bank runs are going to continue?
The bank runs will continue until a Bitcoin standard. This is inevitable. This is inevitable. The system as a whole is insolvent. The banks are insolvent. One of the biggest jokes, I think, is going to be on JP Morgan, because everyone talks about how they're consolidating and everything. And JP Morgan is really just consolidating all of the liabilities of an insolvent banking system. And I don't like, you know, one is like, let's focus on the bullish things, but just like as a, you know, real sound piece of advice, like we, you know, I think a lot of you have, we lived through March 12th. Bitcoin went from 8,000 to 4,000 in a single day.
We survived.
But like, again, I can't predict. It might be 100,000 down to snap down to 50,000. I doubt the drawdown would be as significant given the increase in liquidity. But interest rates being at 5.5% and mortgage costs being at, like, that has ripple effects through an economic system that's highly leveraged that can't be quickly, like, you can pull on the thread, you can't push it back in. So everyone should be cognizant of that. super bullish. Whatever happens to Bitcoin, it's going to spike right back through. But be cognizant of dollar liquidity crisis because the system is highly leveraged.
I mean, on this topic we should mention before going to the crowd, I mean, they changed Basel III this week. They're taking treasuries out of the leverage ratio for the banks, which is essentially a recognition by the government that, number one, we need banks to be able to buy our treasuries more easily. And number two, there's some structural problem on the back end. Like, changing Basel III on the go should not be something that's easily able to do, but they just did it this week.
One random thought I just had was, like, I didn't even know about that. Definitely, like, clear signal that something is structurally, I mean, we know things are structurally broken, but there's some concern that spurs that. But another piece of life advice is that if you sell all your stocks and bonds, you focus a lot less on what the banks are doing. So it's good advice.
All into Bitcoin.
Yeah, Bitcoin and equity in your own business.
Fair enough.
This isn't bullish enough. Come on, like, plan B, stock to flow, we're fucking back. No, I'm hearing, did y'all hear that?
Fuck stock to flow.
CNBC, casual mentions of stock to flow.
No.
Casual mentions of stock to flow. We're fucking back. Let's go.
Q&A.
The red dot is back within the band, you know? It's back within the band.
Stock to flow is a scam, but Bitcoin's designed to pump forever, hopefully.
Yeah, let's talk about that for a second. If we didn't have Joe Kernan on CNBC, like, these guys would be getting away with a ton of...
Dude, Joe's fucking crushing it.
Yeah. He just sits there with disdain.
Raise your hand if you know Joe personally.
He sits there with disdain and pit stains and just goes...
Yeah.
If someone's, like, cousin or, like, sister's cousin or something knows Joe Kernan,
we've got,
like,
McKenzie
made the intro.
Here from...
shit.
Like, what was the comment that he made? He was like, this what it wasn't in, like, the last
money laundering one.
No, yeah. Oh, he did. Yeah, what was that one?
Yeah, Bitcoin this much.
Yeah, he called out the chairman of the SEC when he tried to say that Bitcoin was for criminals. Like,
but Gary,
yeah, like, Joe Kernan was like, come on, like, come on. We know that of all the world's laundering, like, a small fraction, and they all do it with the U.S. dollar.
If Biden used, if you, what Melendez used.
If you watch Squawk, like, they're talking about other things, and you just see him just sitting there, just, like, itching, waiting for the Bitcoin topic to come up. He's like, when can we get to the Bitcoin topic? It gets him through his morning.
His way to get, like, under Andrew Ross Sorkin's skin.
Sorkin's gonna be so fucking salty this cycle.
Yeah.
We barely scratched the surface.
He's gonna go on an adventure with Calvin Air.
Oh yeah, we didn't talk about that.
Oh yeah. That's bullshit.
I mean, Craig Wright's a fraud.
Bullshit.
I mean, we've been saying this for years. I don't like mentioning giving him any air, but I mean, this is a bullish thing. We talked about it last night at BitDevs. Chatham House rules, won't mention any particulars, but we talked about it today as well. Copa successfully defeated Craig Wright in UK court this week. The judge basically ruled that Craig didn't write the white paper. He's not the founder of Bitcoin and didn't write the implementation code. And from the perspective of the Bitcoin industry, this is a really good step towards fixing an attack on open source contributors, because Craig Wright was suing open source contributors, claiming that
he was going after core devs.
Yes, going after core devs. And
yeah, and I'm gonna explain my own very basic understanding of the big problem here, and you guys correct me if I'm wrong. So in America, if you sue somebody, the obligation is on the person who's suing to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that what they're claiming is true. And in the UK, which is the venue where, one of the principal venues where Craig Wright and his wealthy backers have been attacking Bitcoiners and Bitcoin developers, in the UK, it's like a DDoS on free speech, because when you sue somebody, it's on the person who's being sued to prove that what is being said is not true. So it's like the flipped incentive. And so he had been, you know,
just for libel.
Just for libel. So free speech, you know. Yeah. So when people called Craig Wright a fraud because he claimed that he was Satoshi, if you said that in the United States, there's no, you, like, you might, you
can sue anyone in the United States.
What's that? No, we didn't. Yeah. For a reason, for this reason. Exactly. I'm just articulating it, which was, yeah, you can sue someone, but it's going to get thrown out because it's ridiculous. And there's like rules about malice and things like that. In the UK, he would sue people like Peter McCormick because he said Craig Wright's a fraud. And then Peter would have to prove that he's actually a fraud to not have liability. What COPPA and Block helped do was say, okay, now we're going to sue Craig Wright and say he's not Satoshi, and then we're going to prove it. And that by doing that, that
make him prove that he's Satoshi.
Yeah, he has to prove that he's Satoshi, and then it kneecaps his ability to continue to sue Bitcoiners and Bitcoin developers. And there was real consequence. People stopped working on Bitcoin because the threat of being sued for working on open source software. Is that the substance?
Yeah, you did good. And Craig Wright's fraud.
And to be fair, like, he had a lot of accomplices. Like,
yeah,
Calvin Ayer is not a mark. He's part of the con. And these people are scum of the earth.
But it's not even just the obvious BSV people. Like, if you've been around, like, there was a lot of Bitcoin influencers and
Paul,
fund managers, caters in the space that still exists today, that like slowly back to, I mean, still like shame on Gavin to this day.
Yeah, absolutely.
Ryan Selkis, like, and none of them ever said sorry afterwards.
Who's Gavin?
Gavin was our former Anderson. Bitcoin Core maintainer.
The CIA or the FBI. He told Satoshi he was going to the FBI to present Bitcoin.
No, that was Mike Hearn, right?
No, that was Gavin.
That was Gavin.
And Satoshi left a week later.
Yeah, never to be seen from again, right? Until Craig Wright.
Still hasn't been, yeah. No, but like, unless you see like real contrition from not just the main players in the BSV space, right? They were empowered by the people in the market, like, you know, helping them out. They were terrorizing Bitcoin Core developers. They were suing our friends in the space. They were patent trolling. They were doing the scammiest, scummiest thing in the world, and now they're crying crocodile tears on Twitter. Like, fuck them.
The patent trolling will probably continue. This doesn't end that yet.
I love that energy, Will. All right, we've got only like 5 to 10 minutes. We came up here.
We have an hour till the bar ends.
Yeah, so we'll open up the questions. We'll go as long as you guys are willing. But yeah, if you guys have any questions, want to throw out? Yes, Logan.
Logan Hardy, if he zapped anybody today.
Logan, I have not. I've been very busy. It's been a long day. I haven't been on my phone.
Oh, I have a question, Marty. What internet are we on right now?
Ooh, I don't know. Logan.
We're on Logan's cell phone internet because... Did we get back to the Commons internet? There was some karma that happened. I was getting shamed for my internet last week, and then I come to Austin, and we're on
the cell
phone
internet. He did this. He brought it here.
Is that what you're doing? That's where the Wi-Fi is.
Do we have questions from the actual audience?
Question. Sean.
Sahil, can you run mics?
We don't have an
app. We'll
repeat it. R.I.P. Nick Carter.
Proper sound money. And I had a chance to talk to her and also a little bit about this. But in a proper world, you would be able to put up that $1 billion, build the cathedral, and it be maintained in perpetuity because of sound money and a deflationary standard versus the standard we live in.
Can you repeat the question?
Yeah, he was just basically saying, like, in the ideal world, you could build that cathedral and have money in perpetuity to maintain it if your savings wasn't basically debased, if you had like a reasonable deflationary currency, which is like exactly the point, right? Is that like, it is impossible. We complain about the buildings, but we should be complaining about our fucking money. And mortgages on the gold standard, they did exist, but they're exactly the opposite of what they are now, where you would pay for 90% of your house and then you'd finance 10% of it, which made a lot more sense. The risk, yeah, whatever.
But also, like, we can just build nicer buildings. Yeah. Like, we should just not even complain.
Well, I mean...
Yeah, that was one thing that I meant to mention, but one of the reasons why we chose this building that we're sitting in right here is that
prefed
construction.
What color is the roof?
1910. We'll paint it blue. We'll paint it blue to make sure it survives all, you know, targeted
energy. Space lasers are out there, freaks. Beware.
But this is one example of, like, the guy built something beautiful. Funny story was he, you know, at the time he was building the tallest story in Austin. It was 1910. It was going to be 7 stories. Guy Caddy Corner right over there decided to set up shop and build an 8-story building. He said, fuck that. Stop construction midway, built the 7th floor to be reinforcing so he could go 2 floors higher.
Yeah.
9 stories. But it was real.
Yeah, there's like a 70-story building right there.
We'll knock them all down and make this one. But no, it was one of those things where, like, when we were looking for an office, we looked at a bunch of Fiat buildings and we chose this one because it was, it matched the, you know, we had to work in a building where every day that we walked in, we'd be inspired to actually go and produce.
It's a nice building. Special.
It is.
It's a nice building.
Anybody else from the audience?
Oh, we got, oh,
Billy.
Billy asks, which sovereign nation is Parker most excited about?
Me?
I mean, I feel like you look straight at you.
I'm going to say United States.
For obvious reasons.
I'm an American and a Texan. So I love, I'm bullish on Texas first and foremost, but I don't think that, there is that spirit's alive. And so I think Bitcoin just reawakens it, and you put a bunch of Texans on a, bird dogging cheap energy, good things will happen. So I'm certainly bullish about Texas, but Sam Houston thought it was very important to be part of the United States, and I respect, someone that has a lot of vision.
Yeah. And I'll take, Billy, I'll take your question and manipulate a little bit. Which sovereign nation am I most bullish on, like, announcing that they're into Bitcoin? I think it's going to be a country in the Middle East that falls next, whether it's the UAE or Saudi Arabia. Not making any proclamations of whether I want that to happen. That is what I think will happen.
You heard it here first. Marty wants the Saudis to stack. Next question. I saw Ty in the back first. Ty? Whoa.
Secession versus fixing whatever we
have here. He said secession versus fixing whatever we have here.
Contrary to the posture of many Texans, Texas as an independent country was kind of a disaster. It was pretty rough. Now, would it be different this time? Like, probably. Texas was uninhabited, basically, when it was its own country. It couldn't defend its borders. It tried to enforce its borders all the way to Santa Fe, famous Santa Fe expedition, where Lamar sent all these people over there, and then they all got executed like immediately upon arrival in Santa Fe. However, this time it could be different, but I honestly don't think it's a good idea. Like, as Parker said, Sam Houston had a vision for Texas, and that vision included being, he was the president of Texas at one point. Then he became the senator from Texas in the United States, and then the governor of Texas before secession the first time. And I agree with what he said. Like, we are stronger in the United States. The benefits of having 50 sovereign states within the United States far outweighs Texas going it alone, I think.
Yeah, and I think the solution to these systemic problems that we recognize exists in the United States is leaning back into that autonomy that exists between the 50 states and just what Texas can do best is just set an example of, hey, we have a free market, we respect freedom and civil liberties, and then just incite that competition, that jurisdictional competition that forces others to compete on those grounds. Yeah,
10th Amendment maximalists, right?
Yeah, Will said 10th Amendment maximalist.
Yeah, and I'll just relay one funny story. Marty convinced his wife and family to move to Texas. They got here and almost immediately he's like, we're seceding. She's like, what? She's like, I thought we were just like coming here for a year. And he's like, no, we're seceding. But
Love you, baby. My wife and my two boys are here. I do have a Texas native anchor baby.
Yeah, in case we call those anchor babies. Okay. But, one other thing that Sam Houston said was, which was true, the United States needs Texas. Texas does not need the United States. But even that person who held that view thought that it was very important for Texas to be part of the United States. And I think that the wisdom,
Parker made me read the speech on the car ride home from the Houston meetup.
Yeah, I did as he was writing. I was like, we went down to the Houston Bitcoin meetup. It was great, but we're driving back. It was when Abbott basically said, F you to the federal government. We're securing our own borders. And we were pretty fired up.
Did you have Marty read it aloud to you while you were driving?
We did listen to the Audible version.
Yeah, we listened to the Audible version of the book. I pulled up Lone Star. I gave him a little history lesson. I wasn't in the same seventh grade, Texas history teacher that Will is. But I did pretty good. But I think that, the founding fathers, they put forward a structure government where no man was a subject to any other. And I think that was both a radical idea and I kind of think about them as philosopher kings, because, Antonin Scalia made a comment, AJ Scalia, goes by Antonin. He's Antonin Scalia's grandson, works on Bitcoin mining, Cathedra, one of the 1031 portfolio companies. But he talked about, he has this great speech before Congress where he talks about, he asks his law students every year, did before he passed away, what makes America exceptional? And, almost to a person, they say the Bill of Rights. And he reinforces that it's like Russia by the letter has a better Bill of Rights than the United States. Just read it. It's more perfect. But the thing that makes America exceptional is the structure of government. And that I think that, I believe this, that, and I think that people should be far more, long-term minded, is that there's a fly in the ointment that people who created the structure of government could not have imagined, which was the federal government literally got full control of the money. Like, that could never have been a possible scenario that somebody in 1776 could forecast. And that rather than seceding, it's like, hey, let's first take the fly out of the ointment, fix the money, and then let's see how much that fixes of this underlying problem. And so, when I think about that, I think about the wisdom of Sam Houston, but I also think about it in the relationship of Bitcoin is pulling back the tide, basically, and that's going to fix a lot of problems. And we're more wise to see what that fixes before we take rash action to do things unwise.
Next question.
All right. What's up? My name is Mark.
What a marks.
Bitcoin mining. So earlier we were talking about governments are starting to get into the mining game. If you look at a comparison to the Second Amendment, the government has lots of guns, but citizens are able to hold guns too. Do you see a future where every citizen is going to have a right to have a miner in their home, and we're all going to be mining Bitcoin to help secure the network again?
So the question was, the government has a lot of guns, but so do the people have a lot of guns. So in relation to mining, will the government be mining and every person will have the right to also be mining? Will we need to all be mining to protect ourselves from the government?
I don't think so necessarily. The government can't do things well. So the free market will outcompete the government in the context of mining. But on the same tip, the Second Amendment, this is why I don't like Jason Lowry's framing as Bitcoin is something that should be defended by the Second Amendment. He wants to designate Bitcoin and Bitcoin mining as weapons grade technology. I just think that's a terrible frame. Individuals can already mine themselves today. There's nothing the government needs to do to write a law to enable it. It's already happening. Just don't do nothing. Get out of the way. But in terms of the practicality of everybody mining at home, I think over time, as ASIC production becomes more commoditized, it will certainly be enabled. We already have companies escaping. They were in Nashville in January. Atomic or not Atomic?
Futurebit.
Yeah.
I think individuals should learn the skills to defend themselves, and that should be guns and Bitcoin. And that includes mining. I think most free individuals will have some type of mining exposure in the future. But also, like, I'm not bearish on, like, total energy usage of Bitcoin mining.
What's our bet? Over above 50%?
You were at like 1%, right?
Closer to 1 than 50. Yeah, that was what I said.
I don't remember what our bet is, but it's on the tapes. Yeah. We can check.
Well past 1% in Texas.
Yeah, but globally, I mean, Texas.
My view of on it is, like, if you go talk to Jamie McAvity, like, that guy literally moved from New York to Fort Stockton to go find cheap energy. Like, are you willing to do that? So yes. I think that the like, this is a ruthless game to go seek out and search out the cheapest power, the cheapest energy. There's no, there's no brownie points for effort. And pure economic incentives are on the line, which translates to your time. I think that that dictates that the people that actually know how to go produce power are going to do this far cheaper. And, you know, we're not getting like stars for fifth grade participation. And that the most important thing, I do think that there's, I think that there's going to be laws passed or amendments passed that reify or enforce that we have the ability to use Bitcoin or any form of money we want to. I think I could see that, because I think if, like, Bitcoin needs no favors, we just need someone to say, and I would love for the state of Texas to say, you have the right to hold Bitcoin here, you have the right to mine Bitcoin here, and you have the right to transact it. We need no more favors other than that. Just protect God-given constitutional rights. You know, so I could see that, but then we have no reason for each of us to be a home miner. We can all go about our lives and let people that are nuts like Jamie go out to Fort Stockton and, you know, consume the cheapest power known to man. That'd be the best.
Guess we'll see how it plays out. Next question. Mr. Gentry. He asked, how important is it to manufacture Bitcoin mining ASICs in the U.S., and what is the path to make that happen? It seems like Intel's opportunity was very disappointing.
I think Intel's getting back on in the game.
Yeah.
Intel's back on. We've got Foundry spinning up here in Taylor, Texas, Samsung, TSMC in Arizona. But to the broader point, I mean, it's inarguable. The most centralized point of the Bitcoin physical world supply chain is the ASICs. You have this duopoly that exists, and this conversation has been going on for a while. But I do think it's important to realize and to note that these are extremely capital intensive businesses. And so in terms of it being a systemic risk to the network, I find it hard to believe that, like, Bitmain and MicroBT would risk the long-term viability of their businesses by doing something stupid to the Bitcoin network.
I mean, the more likely thing would be, like, they got squashed for some reason, and then hash rate would stall for a bit.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't necessarily be that bad for Bitcoin.
Worst case scenario is, like, but don't want to...
You're not giving them alpha.
If the foundries were to be taken over by the military, bombed, God forbid, where these ASICs are made. I mean, the worst case scenario is that you just difficulty adjust down to the point where GPU mining is profitable.
You get into like the ASIC maintenance business.
Yeah.
That would be fucking lucrative. Like, everyone would be trying to repair all the 10-year-old ASICs.
I zoned out there for a second, but we're not going back to GPU mining. I mean, like,
there's no shot we're going back to the I don't even think in a worst case scenario we're doing that.
I do think the natural incentives, I think to Ryan's point, I do think it's important that there's diversity and decentralization of everything in Bitcoin, and that is a risk, not an existential one. But I do think every opportunity to figure out ways to make, you know, I don't know if it's, you know, outside of China, but it's certainly more than two. And understanding that it requires a lot of capital and a lot of risk and a lot of lead time, that it is important. I think that it's certainly better that MicroBT is there now, because a few years ago, and they're out competing Bitmain. I mean, they're taking share.
I mean, I think this is bigger than Bitcoin
on a percentage
basis. Like America needs the sovereignty of producing your own shit. Like,
that's what I was going to say.
Can't be like relying on other places to do the shit.
The offshoring of everything, I think, is going to come back on a sound money standard. Well, it just doesn't make sense with a free market to think you can build something way over there and ship it across the world when all you needed was just to build it right here. So,
well, it's like in Bitcoin mining, we're in a perpetual COVID crisis since day one, right? Where like we found out that we don't have antibiotics and we don't make shit in America. It's like that's the entire history of Bitcoin mining, and that can't be the end game.
And this all stems from fiat money. Triffin's dilemma, like the reason why all this stuff is produced over in Asia, is because we were forced to dollarize the world, and we did that by flooding these markets with cheap dollars, taking advantage, or flooding their markets with dollars to take advantage of their cheap labor, and that's what moved the manufacturing base.
Did we say clear enough though to Ryan your point? Like the last we heard in Nashville actually was that the Intel project's back on. Like they canceled or paused it temporarily, but apparently they're back at it.
It was just the bear market and then Bitcoin.
Ryan, used to work at Intel. You should just run into the. You should just
everyone like pauses and cancels shit during the bear market, and then they're Bitcoiners again in the bull market, and here we are.
Yeah. Last question from Dave. Then we're gonna wrap.
That were ramping up the produce in the U.S. under the CHIPS Act that have now pulled out, and this almost sounds like a joke, but it's real. It was because of DEI requirements under the CHIPS Act, they just got so fed up with it, they're like, screw this. But like, one of the examples, I think it was Samsung gave, was, you know, to dig the foundation of the building, a certain percentage of the construction workers had to be female. And they're like, well,
what?
Women don't work, this is just like a male-dominated job, we can't find enough people. And it was that times like 1,000 things, and they were just like, we're done. We're just not doing this anymore.
This is...
So, Marty, I take it back. We should secede.
I mean, what Dave just... For those of you watching a live stream and well, the recorded audio, Dave basically just explained that onshore ASIC manufacturers here in the United States moved out because DEI requirements were requiring them to have a certain percentage of women construction workers. I mean... This gets to a broader point.
I'm going to push back on that, but.
Okay. The broader point I want to make is like whether it's what's going on with Roman at Bitcoin Fog, what's going on with the DEI initiatives. Like, I do really think, and I'm really happy that Tony gave the presentation that he did earlier today, is we need to begin pushing back against this. Like, the DEI stuff is absolutely absurd. And I don't want to get myself in trouble, but if I were ever forced to make a DEI decision as a director of a publicly traded company, I would identify as a lesbian woman. And who are you to tell me that I'm not? I think this we literally have to DDoS this system by holding up a mirror to their abject insanity and just be like, no, I'm a lesbian woman. Who are you to tell me I'm not?
All right. Uncensorable media, love it. The only reason, the thing I would push back on has nothing to do with DEI. There's a lot of money at stake. And look what BlackRock did. They used ESG to make as much money as they could. And then they figured out that they needed Bitcoin to make money. And so they said they're dropping the ESG term, and they helped the SEC come to a better conclusion about an ETF. So they could make money. And the same corrupt system exists with these people like, you know, Samsung that have a ton of money that can buy politicians. So it's like, I think that they probably just couldn't build a better chip. And then they probably were explaining it away because of DEI, because if there's enough money at stake, which there is in Bitcoin and Bitcoin mining, and you got a good product, you can change the rules to get your way.
It wasn't chip manufacturers literally constructing the ASICs on.
I'm just saying. Yeah. If Larry Fink can get a Bitcoin ETF passed in 2024, then Samsung can figure out how to, you know, they're building other chips in the United States with construction people.
It was literally the construction of the form factor of the box. You were doing that here instead of Malaysia or somewhere else.
I know, but they still got the fab in the
Taylor.
So I think we'll get US made chips, but it's going to require quality.
Sound money.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was a good one, Matt.
Q. Huge shout out to all you guys. Austin is Austin's the Bitcoin capital of the world. Let's go. Yeah.
We'll make sure we never leave without Tennessee.
We're going to win. Thank you, guys. Love you all. Peace, love.